Today on Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon, we take a look at what he's titled Jacob's Tale of Woe. He stands before the Pharaoh and tells him of his life and how horrible and hard it was. And the question we have today is it really? Is your life hard and troubled? Or can you stand with the Apostle Paul and say, for our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all? How we understand and view our troubles and the troubles in this life is really key to the success that we have in our walk and relationship with Christ. And that's what we learn today in chapters 45 and 46 of Genesis. Here's Pastor Chris now with today's broadcast of Abounding Grace Radio.
Genesis chapter 46, beginning at verse 31. This is the word of the Lord. Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, I will go up and tell Pharaoh and will say to him, my brothers and my father's household who were in the land of Canaan have come to me, and the men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. When Pharaoh calls you and says, what is your occupation? You shall say, your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth even until now, both we and our fathers, in order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians. So Joseph went in and told Pharaoh, my father and my brothers, with their flocks and herds and all that they possess, have come from the land of Canaan. They are now in the land of Goshen. And from among his brothers he took five men and presented them to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to his brothers, what is your occupation? And they said to Pharaoh, your servants are shepherds, as our fathers were. They said to Pharaoh, we have come to sojourn in the land, for there is no pasture for your servants' flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. And now please let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them settle in the land of Goshen. And if you know any able men among them, put them in charge of my livestock. Then Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and stood him before Pharaoh. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Jacob, how many are the days of the years of your life? And Jacob said to Pharaoh, the days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they've not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from the presence of Pharaoh. Then Joseph settled his father and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramses, as Pharaoh had commanded. And Joseph provided his father, his brothers, and all his father's household with food according to the number of their dependents. May the Lord bless this morning the hearing of his word. It dawned on me this past week as I was reflecting on this passage, meditating on this passage, the remarkable truth that comes out in the scriptures when it says how wonderful it is that God chose to inspire Jacob, I've loved. Jacob, I have loved. Most people get hung up on the Esau I have hated. But for the first time in my life, I think I'm beginning to understand the marvel of that first part, which we never really marvel over. We think that's just something that should be natural, something that God should do. God's love, therefore he should love everyone. I'm finally coming to grips with how radical a statement it is, Jacob, I have loved. Where do I find in the scriptures, Abraham, I've loved. Isaac, I've loved. Moses, I've loved. It's not that he didn't love them. Of course, he loved them. But that God chose to tell us in a very special way, Jacob, I've loved. Why did God do that? Why of all people? Well, the short answer is God wanted you to understand the marvels of grace and the depths of love toward the most difficult in the Bible, I would think, to love. The most difficult. He was the greatest rebel of them all. There was nothing attractive about this man, outwardly speaking, his whole life, his choices, what he did. God loved him. It's a marvel. And you only understand, begin to understand when you realize that that hatred because of sin should be the response toward everyone, right? Jacob, I've loved. What conclusion would God want you to draw if he decided by his Spirit to inspire something like that? What conclusion would he want you to draw? Well, it seems to me there's one great conclusion that he would want us all to draw. If he could love a man like that, then he could love me too. And he could love you too. The whole story puts on display the marvels of grace in a radical way. And this morning we return now after some time to really closing down the life of Jacob. Everything has been building for us to see the Lord's deliverance of Jacob. And his plan unfolds. And Jacob now sees it. Jacob now is beginning to understand it. After all these years of going through his life and doing what he wanted to do, he's finally seeing in the twists and turns of life that God had intended what he saw as hardship. He had intended it all for good. When for so long, he refused to see that. And what we have this morning is, in this passage, a sort of summary of how Jacob looks over his life. You ever thought about when you get to be, if the Lord gives you many years on this earth, and you look back over your life, what would you say about it? How would you characterize it? What would you describe about your life? What would you say? What do you think he's going to say? Would you say right now, looking over the course of your own lives, that you had a life that was good, hard, full of difficulty, full of struggle? What would it be? You have described his own struggle living as a pilgrim, a traveler, a sojourner. You have all this language used of the patriarchs, going through this life, going somewhere else, and he's starting to express that as he looks back over his life and he understands this. But I have to say, as I wrestled through this passage this last week, I struggled with how to structure this particular section. What I want to do this morning is interact with his confession, his statement, the summary of his life before Pharaoh. It's a remarkable moment when you look at the whole picture here, who he is standing in front of. And I believe we learn a lot from this about the life of faith, good and bad, what God desires of us, and what kind of response he wants from us to his marvelous plan of redemption. Marvelous. When I was a basketball player, I had many good coaches in college. I had bad coaches. Sometimes I learn just as much from the bad coaches. This is an interesting moment before Pharaoh. I see good and I see bad. And I want to ask the question with you this morning, what kind of response do we get from somebody who's now seeing and looking back over his life? There are really three ways I chose to break it down here. I want to begin with his witness, and then we'll look at his perspective, and then his blessing. So let's start with the witness, which I think really stands out here. Last time, we had the grand reunion. It was a glorious section of Genesis where Jacob had come face to face with his son, a moving section. It was so emotional. Many of you came up to me and said that. I can't believe how emotional this all has been. He received his son back from the dead, so to speak. And now we're turning to the place of Israel in the land of Egypt. This is all setting up for the future. Genesis is really preparation for Exodus. And everything in our text this morning is focusing now, as they're being situated in the land, on Jacob's presentation before Pharaoh. You'll see that there in verse 7 of chapter 47. Then Joseph brought Jacob his father and stood before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Jacob, "How many are the days of the years of your life?" And Jacob said to Pharaoh, The days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they've not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from the presence of Pharaoh. If you get into the heart of that, this is the platform from which we can understand what is happening now in Egypt to Jacob and his son. This is where I'm working this morning, from this little statement he makes in front of Pharaoh. It's so telling. But you can't minimize the event. It's a glorious event. Here is Jacob, 130 years old, set before the worlds of that time, the greatest monarch, the greatest monarch of the greatest empire of the day, if you will. And here's this aged Jewish shepherd who's a nobody in the eyes of the Egyptians, presented to Pharaoh, standing. I don't know if you can picture this, but you know, we have records of things when people were presented to Pharaoh, of how that went and what was expected and how they were to present themselves. Pharaoh, remember, boys and girls, at this time, he was considered to be a god. He wore the massive, remember, sign of the serpent. And he himself was considered to be the embodiment of the sun god Ra at times. In fact, in Egyptian literature, we have a description of how the people were presented before Pharaoh. A man's speech was to be pure, clean, dressed in fresh clothes, shod in white sandals, painted with eye paint, anointed with the finest oil of myrrh. Powerful moment where this aged patriarch is set before Pharaoh. Pharaoh looks at him. How old are you? First question. Egyptians valued age, nothing like our culture. Egyptians valued age. How do you feel when you read there, the days of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they've not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning. What emotion comes to mind when you read that? I don't know about you, but you're set as God's chosen one whom he has loved in the earth in front of this man. Is that what you want to say? Is that what you want to say? And the curious thing is, Pharaoh didn't even ask for that. Doesn't that sound more like a moan than a witness? How do you take it? For 20 years, he had, of course, been in misery. In the last scene, he had his joy returned to him. I mean, what a scene, right? In the next breath, right after this glorious reception back of his son, he's back moaning about his hard life. I believe you see this in his whole perspective. Remember what he said in the heart of his afflictions earlier on? When he was in the heart of his afflictions, he said, everything is against me. Everybody's against me. Everything's against me. And you thought, oh, well, that's a terrible thing to say, but maybe I could understand that when you're in the heart of your afflictions, that everyone's against you. But now he's seen it all unfold. He's got his son back. All his sons are there. He's being provided for. He's got food. He's living. He's being protected. Doesn't he see the goodness of God? I've known people like this. I've been like this. They grumble and they moan about everything. That's all they know. That's all they know how to do. That's what they know what to do. That's just the natural disposition. That's the natural thing that seems to come out of their hearts. They moan about this. They grumble about this. They moan. They're never happy. That's all they know. It's what they know. You tell them, look outside the window to the beautiful creation God has made, and all they see is that it's dirty. In the face of the gospel, they can't get out of the old way of life. If you were to look over the course of decisions in Jacob's life, what would you come up with? Well, if you were to look over the course of his own decisions, you'd come up with a lot of evil things. He hurt his father. Do you carry guilt over how you've treated parents. He ran outside the land for years. He cheated. He stole from his brother. His sons, for a whole period of time, turned out to be menaces to society. Killed a city over his raped daughter. Lost a son for 22 years of his life. Lost his beloved wife, Rachel, along the way. Didn't love Leah. If you compiled the decisions you've made in life and you looked back at the major decisions in life, would you feel a lot of stress or maybe guilt about lack of things that you've done or things that you have done in creating messes as a father, as a mother, as a son, as a daughter? Remember the gopher. Gopher doesn't see any of that. Would it bother you? If you were to look at life that way, and you were to think about life that way, what would, you know, we could all come up with some kind of statement, you know, and you might even look at people if you have seen outcomes in people's lives, and you look at them and you say, that they lived that tough life, hard life they've lived. You hear that about certain people, hard life they've lived. And when we dwell upon these kind of things, the kind of witness and effect it has is a moaning effect, a mumbling effect, a tale of woe. And what we're running up here against is a setting here is Jacob set in contrast to God's plan and the choices that were contrary to the Lord's choices and how it all worked out. All Jacob can see is his own choices. All Jacob can see is the sad course of his own life. And here's my question this morning. Here's what I'm trying to build to this morning. Is it true? Is it true that his life was few and evil? His days were few and that his life was an evil life? Well, I guess it depends on how you look at it. From a human perspective, it's true. It's true. His years were few. Well, he doesn't know when he's dying yet, does he? He has no idea how much longer he's going to live. So that's not really something he can say at this point. Are they evil? Here's the truth. Here's the truth. In every circumstance, God had been with him. Never left him. That was his promise at Bethel. And the whole way through, God had been turning everything for good. When he damaged the relationship with his father, when he hurt his brother, God reconciled it. Brought him back together on the deathbed, remember? Made Jacob confront his brother face to face. When he was in Haran and he was on the run and he was doing his own thing and he schemed, Uncle Laban had schemed and worked him a good one, the schemer working the schemer. Remember what happened? God turned the whole thing back around for blessing on Jacob and he left with more flocks than he had ever dreamed of. And then God fills him in that land with 12 sons whom God loved. When his sons slaughtered the Shechemites and Jacob's scared to death about the inhabitants of Canaan going to kill him, it says the terror of the Lord fell on all the land of Canaan and all the Canaanites so that they were scared to death of Jacob. God took a giant shield and surrounded his life. God would, at his lowest moment, speak to him in chapter 35. I'm changing you. I'm changing your name. It's no longer Jacob, but Israel. And all the land that I ever promised to Abraham and to Isaac, I'm giving it all to you. And then the last chapter, Jacob goes to Egypt. God comes as soon as he's standing there on the border, heading out of the land. God comes and talks to him as a father does to his child. And the Lord says to him, Jacob, I'm going to be with you. And here's what I'm going to do for you. Your son, whom you lost for 22 years, I'm going to sanctify your death. And he'll be the one that will stand there and put his hand over your eyes. That's remarkable. Do you see all that the Lord has done for you? Psalm 107. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. For his mercy endures forever. Listen to this. Let the redeemed of the Lord say so. Just say it. Whom he has redeemed from the hand of the enemy and gathered out of the lands from east and from the west, from north and from the south. They wandered in the wilderness in a desolate way. They found no city to dwell in, hungry and thirsty. Their soul fainted in them. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and he delivered them out of all of their distresses. And he led them forth by the right way, that they may go to a city for a dwelling place. Oh, that men would thank the Lord for his goodness. Oh, that they would just do that. Because they don't do it. And for his wonderful works that he does to the children of men. For he satisfies the longing soul. And he fills the hungry soul spiritually with goodness. Oh, that men would give thanks to the Lord for his goodness. This psalm just keeps saying it. And for his wonderful works to the children of men, let them sacrifice the sacrifices of thanksgiving and declare his works with rejoicing. Yet he sets the poor on high, far from affliction. He makes their families like a flock. Whoever is wise will observe these things, it says, and they will understand the loving kindness of the Lord. Now, Jacob saw every bit of those things. Tell me about your life. Few and evil have been the days of my life. Are you kidding me? Is that what you want to say? Is that your witness? When you get to sit in front of Pharaoh and God gave you that, what's your attitude in the midst of hardships? See, now that turns right to us. Are you bitter? Are you sitting here this morning distressed? Are you anxious?
Questions to consider and ponder as we close out today's program. And it is our prayer that after listening to today's broadcast, you come away with a clearer understanding that though those trials may be real, the love of God, the grace of God, is even grander and more real, and it allows those trials to really pale in comparison to the glories of God and his love for you today. You're listening to Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon. Questions, comments about the program, as always, are more than welcome. We'd love to hear from you. How's the program encouraging you in your walk and relationship with Christ? Reach out to us. Let us know, won't you? Our number is 888-504-8805, or you can visit us online, agradio.org. Now, that is a great resource to have handy. Not only do we have past programs available online at our website, we also have jumping off points to Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as recent articles written by Pastor Chris and other friends of the ministry. Again, agradio.org. We also would like to remind you that you're a very key part of this ministry, Abounding Grace Radio. Through your financial partnership with us and prayerful support, we are able to continue this ministry, not only on this station, but others as well. So would you please consider partnering with us financially, whether it's a one-time gift, a monthly gift, no gift is too small or too large. Reach out to us again at agradio.org or call us at 888-504-8805. Well, that is all the time we have today. We'll close out our time together and look forward to joining you tomorrow as we continue our look at Genesis chapters 45 and 46, Jacob's tale of woe, and God's faithfulness in the midst of a hard life. If you're living a hard life, This broadcast is just for you. So we'll see you tomorrow for another broadcast of Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon. Abounding Grace is brought to you on this radio station by Abounding Grace Radio Ministries.
Hi, I'm Chris Gordon, the host of Abounding Grace Radio. I'm also the pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. If you are local to Southern California and live near the Escondido area, we would love to see you at one of our worship services on Sunday. We worship at 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. at the Escondido United Reformed Church, 1864 North Broadway here in Escondido. You can find us on the web at www.escondidourc.org. EscondidoURC.org. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.